Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 20th of May 2017. I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Welcome to the show. I'm going to be covering quite a few stories today. There's quite a number of interesting little tidbits to share with you that I've been scooping up over the week. I want to begin with two interconnected stories that are very important for the times we live in. Firstly, the release of Chelsea Manning, who had been sentenced to 35 years in prison for under espionage charges related to WikiLeaks. And secondly, the impending release of Julian Assange. He's still in the Ecuadorian embassy, but the Swedish government has announced that they are dropping the investigation into the allegations that he engaged in some sort of improper sexual activity 6 or 7 years ago. And he should be able to walk free, although he still is subject to arrest by the UK police in a quite a bizarre twist, because he jumped bail back at the time when the arrest warrant was still valid against him. He jumped bail to seek asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy, and this, of course, is a crime. So if Julian Assange does walk out of the embassy, he will not be extradited to Sweden, but he will be arrested by the British bobbies who are waiting outside. So it's quite a significant milestone, really, in this whole sort of saga of WikiLeaks and everything that represents. The release of Chelsea Manning was a result of the reprieve granted by Barack Obama as he left office. And the decision of the Swedish prosecutors not to go ahead with their investigation, as they called it, seems to be finally an admission that the whole thing was a load of garbage. And, of course, anyone who had followed the Julian Assange story, anyone who'd done the minimum amount, just really what's available in public, uncontested mainstream coverage, could see that there was simply no case against Julian Assange. Indeed, there were no charges. There were never any charges filed against him. The only reason why he was able to be extradited was due to a glitch, really, in the laws in relation to the EU about extradition. And I think those laws have now subsequently been changed, and it wouldn't be able to happen again. The situation at the time that he was detained was that a person could be extradited from one country in the EU to another country in the EU without even a criminal charge being laid. A person could be extradited simply for the purpose of wanting to interview that person. And this situation, it embodies travesties of basic principles of common law, which indeed is one of the reasons why so many people had become so sceptical of the EU and what it symbolises. And in a way, and this isn't often discussed, but Julian Assange's incarceration is an illustration of why we do not want a world government, for example. I mean, the EU is a laboratory experiment on world government, isn't it? It's a whole collection of countries that came together under one umbrella with a parliament based in Belgium, still having semi-autonomous countries with their nationalities and passports, but obliterating borders and using one currency. This is a prototype for what many people would like to see expanded. They would like to see a larger and larger conglomeration of countries that have this type of arrangement. But And, of course, there are great positive things that could come for that. The convenience factor. The convenience factor of using one currency. The convenience factor of being able to travel. And these are great things. But the costs are very high as well. And the cost comes in forms of tyranny. And as we've seen with the detention of Julian Assange, who has effectively been a prisoner for 5 years, this was made possible by the super state of the EU having slipped in these provisions into law that basically allow people to be... that allow the legal system, that allow the framework of the judicial system to bypass some of the core principles of freedoms and core principles of democracy that go back thousands of years in European civilization. You cannot arrest someone without a charge. I mean, this is such a basic thing, ladies and gentlemen. It's such a basic thing. And the fact is that that Julian Assange was detained without charges being laid. And a lot of people just don't really fully grasp that. There were no charges being laid. There were merely allegations. And there were allegations that had been raised by women who subsequently dropped the allegations and didn't want the case pursued themselves. But the prosecutors in Sweden decided they didn't care if there was no victim. They didn't care if the purported victims had basically changed their mind. Oh, no. They wanted to just proceed with this anyway. And none of it makes any sense, of course, does it? It all seems totally illogical. Why would this even happen? Why would people want to waste their time? Why would they want to waste the time of these highly paid prosecutors? Why would the legal system grind on for no apparent purpose? Well, and that indeed is why, from the beginning, Julian Assange and his supporters said, no, there is a reason behind this. It's clearly not the reason they've given. It's not the purported reason they've given. It's just being used as a way to hold him and to hold him perhaps until the United States is able to extradite him. And Sweden being a country that is particularly easy, that has a history of allowing the US to extradite people with minimum resistance. So the travesty of justice is made possible by the tyranny of a prototypical world government. So at this point, we're not absolutely certain what's going to happen with Julian Assange, because the fact being that he could be detained again by the British authorities and they could hold him again. I think there is a limit to how long they could hold him, but they could hold him long enough for the US to possibly extradite him. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. It may even be that this was actually a deliberate ploy, that now that the charges have been dropped, that the Ecuadorian embassy will be forced to let Julian go, that the Ecuadorian government will have to say, well, you know, we granted you asylum for this reason. Now that pretext is dropped. You're going to have to walk out the door, and then the British will arrest him, and possibly then he'll be extradited. It's an outside possibility. I somehow don't think it's going to happen. I think we've turned the corner, and I think, especially with the release of Chelsea Manning at the same roughly point in time, I think we're turning a corner and we're moving into a new era. So let's feel positive about that. We're definitely moving into a new phase. The witch hunt against Donald Trump has again accelerated with a brief pause there where it seemed that Trump was dancing to the tune of the establishment. But again, it seems that there is a heated and nasty campaign to try and depose Trump. And I think it's unlikely that Trump, in the current situation, is going to oversee the extradition of Julian Assange. I want to talk about Bitcoin a little today. Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, has been skyrocketing in the last few months. And just in the last month, it has increased in value by over 60%. I've got an article here from Forbes, published on the 19th of May, 2017. Here is why Bitcoin prices rose by 60% over a month. While Japan has made the cryptocurrency a legal payment method, many countries are following suit, which is likely to shoot up the rates further. Bitcoin prices are on the rise. Over the last year, they were up by 330% and are currently traded at $1,810. The price has shot up by 60% over the last month, and that has attracted many Indians to the cryptocurrency. Actually, this is an article published in India, so that's why they mentioned Indians. But it's very significant that that it is increasing in popularity in India, considering the size of that country and its economy. The overall price of the currency has gone up on news that many countries are now making Bitcoins legal. Japan has started to accept Bitcoin as a legal currency, with consumer retailer Bic Camera leading the pack. This has resulted in the price of cryptocurrency shooting up by 80% over the last 1 month, making Japan the largest Bitcoin market in the world. Investors expect a lot more countries to make legal use of Bitcoins. It suggests here that investors need to be careful and only hold around 5% of Bitcoins in their overall portfolio. And this is the thing I wanted to concentrate on a bit here, because there are some issues with Bitcoin that have never been totally resolved to my satisfaction. It is understandable that this technology of the blockchain and its ability to ensure instant secure transactions, it makes sense that is worth a lot of money. But Bitcoin as a currency itself is not a currency that's ever been backed by anything. It was created as a currency out of thin air using this technology back in 2008. But there was never any collateral to back up the value represented in those bitcoins to start off with. Now, of course, this is a very complex issue. When I come back from the break, I'll explain a little more about what I mean about that and why I think it's something to be concerned about. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
Cookies.
Cookie? Me love cookies.
Oh, hi, Cookie Muncher. No, these are yucky cookies.
Cookies? Yucky? No bad cookies.
You can't even eat these cookies. These are cyber cookies.
No, can't eat?
No, they are cyber cookies and they clog up your computer.
Me have apple.
Really? Oh, that's an actual apple.
Yummy apple.
I'm going to throw away these yucky cookies in the trash. I click Control, Shift, Delete, and then scroll down to Cookies and clear them.
Bye-bye, yucky cookies.
Now, I go to logosradionetwork.com and I click on the Amazon box on the upper right-hand side, bookmark the link, and I can go to Amazon through this link and order you some yummy new cookies.
New cookies? For me?
Consider it an early Christmas present. And every time I order on Amazon, I go through this link and I give a little present to this radio network, too. C is for cookie.
C is for classified.
It's the 2017 Logos Radio Network annual fundraiser, sponsored by Central Texas Gunworks, Defense Distributed, and Fat Sal's Deli. Go to LogosRadioNetwork.com and enter to win. Every $25 donation is a chance to win. From Central Texas Gunworks, first place up for grabs, a Spikes Tactical AR-15. Second place, Taurus PT-111 G2 9mm pistol from Defense Distributed. Third place, the AR-308 80% lower. Fourth place, the AR-15 80% lower from Fat Sal's Deli. Fifth place, $100 gift card for Fat Sal's Deli. Every $25 donation is a chance to win. That's LogosRadioNetwork.com. Also, if you purchase Randy Kelton's ebook, Legal 101, you get 4 chances to win. Purchase Eddie Craig's traffic seminar and get 10 chances to win. And remember, every $25 donation is a chance to win. Go to LogosRadioNetwork.com for details and donate today.
Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name is Herewood Fenton, and it is a great pleasure to be with you today. Now, as I was saying before the break, Bitcoin, it is a fascinating technology. And in the current instability of global money markets, it's easy to see how the value of this could have exponentially increased once it started to be traded. Once it could be traded, its trading value was going to be subject to various factors. And from the beginning of its trade, it has been incredibly volatile. But the concern I have about it is that Bitcoin is not based on anything at all, unlike the currency of a nation, the fiat currency of a nation. And I agree, there are a lot of things to be concerned about with that as well, because fiat currencies are typically not backed by any solid collateral either, but they are backed by the nation-state itself, and the nation-state is a solid thing. It's a real thing. A nation-state is a group of people in a country, a sovereign nation, that produce products and services and export and have economies, right? So the currency, the fiat currency of a nation-state has a more stable basis than something that is just was created out of thin air to start off with, that is completely decentralized. And what this means is, with in relation to Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin could just keep going up and up and up, or it could suddenly crash and it could go down to almost nothing. It has basically nothing to stabilize it, to hold it. It has no safety net. Whereas countries generally have a safety net. They can prevent their currency from dropping below a certain level, unless extreme situations develop, and that does happen in war and a complete economic collapse. But that's relatively rare. So where is Bitcoin going? I mean, some people say it's going to $10,000, but why stop there? But the problem there, the problem I see with this, is that with this vast, massive increase in value, a lot of traders, a lot of people are going to be just using Bitcoin to make a quick fortune. And I think we're going to start seeing more volatility in Bitcoin. I think we're going to start seeing spikes and crashes in Bitcoin as we go forward. And a lot of people are going to make a lot of money, and a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money. So it is a fascinating thing to watch, but is it something you want to actually be involved in? Is it something you want to be a guinea pig in relation to? I'm not sure. I mean, we all have to make our decision in that regard. I mean, clearly, if you had bought Bitcoin 2 years ago or more, you're probably pretty safe. Although that's still not guaranteed. I mean, in 2015, Bitcoin dropped back down to around about 300, even a bit less than 300 US dollars. But there's no reason to say that Bitcoin couldn't drop below that again. There's absolutely, and people have, I believe, an unreal expectation about Bitcoin because they're attached to it and because they're invested in it. And they don't recognize the reality that Bitcoin technically has no floor. It has no ceiling. So it's very interesting, and let's just keep watching it, but let's be intelligent about it. Okay, I'm going to move on to some other important stories of note. I want to talk about an abortion law reform bill that was put forward in the New South Wales Parliament last week. And this was a bill that sought to remove abortion from the criminal statutes. And it was put forward by the Greens in New South Wales. The bill received support from 8 Labor MLCs and 5 Green MLCs, as well as Animal Justice Party MLC Mark Pearson. Public members in the gallery shouted shame as the result of the conscience vote was announced in the Legislative Council. The law would have repealed sections of the Crimes Act related to abortion and would have provided a 150-metre protester exclusion zone around abortion service providers and would have required doctors providing medical advice to tell their patients if they had personal objections to the procedure. The proposal, and this is the most key thing about this, which I want to focus on a little bit, the proposal provided no gestational limits on when the procedure could be performed. A Greens spokeswoman told SBS World News the law was modelled on the ACT's legal framework. The Australian Medical Association believes New South Wales abortion laws need to be reviewed, but said it was concerned about the breadth of the Greens bill. Now, in the ACT, there is no gestational limit on abortion. That means you can have an abortion right up until the day before your baby is ready to be born. And it's completely legal. And there is really no impediment to having that done. And a lot of people listening to this might not even believe this, how shockingly barbaric Australia is in certain respects. But this is a fact, ladies and gentlemen. You can walk into a clinic in the ACT as a woman with a swollen belly and the baby sitting there inverted, ready to come out, and you can say, I've changed my mind, I don't want to have this baby now. And it is completely legal for them to have that baby just ripped out of you and chopped up, which is, you know, what they do. They have to chop it up. I mean, It's a person in there, ladies and gentlemen. It's a person inside you. Mark McAwicky, New South Wales State Director of the Australian Christian Lobby, says he was confident that this bill would be defeated. "It is a victory for women and unborn children," he said. "This bill is the most extreme we've seen so far." The group says that removing gestational limits could lead to women being pressured into getting terminations. Women's rights groups, such as White Ribbon, worry that criminalisation allows women to be pressured into pregnancy or staying in abusive relationships. So, we have in our society now this kind of tension between completely polarised views on the subject of abortion. And it makes you wonder, where is this headed? Because honestly, I mean, I've got a fairly clear understanding of it myself, that, and it's non-negotiable. I mean, ripping a child out of the womb at 40 weeks is unconscionable. And it is technically murder. But I don't subscribe to the extreme right-wing position that abortion should be completely illegal. And I'll explain more of that when we come back from break with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
Remember that a man's name is to him the sweetest and most important sound in the English language. Scientific research proves Dale Carnegie's famous words are true. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to explain how loving your name affects your life choices.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Researchers at the State University of New York say the sound of your name could influence your life decisions. It's a phenomenon they call implicit egotism. People prefer places, things, and professions they associate with themselves. For example, there are disproportionately more people named Cali in California, and there are more Louises in St. Louis. It's not just because they're born there and given a related name. People also move there because of the name association preference. You might even choose a career based on your name. Dennis and Denise are overrepresented in the ranks of dentists. And if you're named Laura or Larry, you're statistically much more likely to become a lawyer. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
What are you thinking? Micro plant powder with iodine and probiotics for a total body detox for around $10 a month. HempUSA.org has 12 formulations of micro plant powder for absorbing and removing toxins from your kidneys, liver, blood, lungs, stomach, and colon, and feel better than ever. It alkalizes, oxygenates, kills parasites, does the job of 10 products. That saves you space, time, and money. Call 888-910-4367 only at HempUSA.org.
Rule of Law Radio is proud to offer the Rule of Law Traffic Seminar. In today's America, we live in an us-against-them society, and if we, the people, are ever going to have a free society, then we're going to have to stand and defend our own rights. Among those rights are the right to travel freely from place to place, the right to act in our own private capacity, and most importantly, the right to due process of law. Traffic courts afford us the least expensive opportunity to learn how to enforce and preserve our rights through due process. Former Sheriff's Deputy Eddie Craig, in conjunction with Rule of Law Radio, has put together the most comprehensive teaching tool available that will help you understand what due process is and how to hold the courts to the rule of law. You can get your own copy of this invaluable material by going to ruleoflawradio.com and ordering your copy today. By ordering now, you'll receive a copy of Eddie's book, The Texas Transportation Code, The Law Versus the Lie, video and audio of the original 2009 seminar, hundreds of research documents, and other useful resource material. Learn how to fight for your rights with the help of this material from ruleoflawradio.com. Order your copy today, and together we can have the free society we all want and deserve.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Now, as I was explaining there before the break, my position on abortion, which is held by many people, is that the procedure should be accepted and should not be considered homicide if it's conducted at an early enough stage in the pregnancy. Because at a very, very early stage in the pregnancy, the embryo is very, very small and it is not even akin to a human being. And I'm really saying up to about 8 or 9 weeks. But once you cross that threshold, once you cross that 8 or 9 week threshold, it does become different and we enter into a much more morally ambiguous area. Now, of course, there are those, the sort of purists, who say, no, abortion should be completely illegal, should be not be allowed at all in any way, shape or form. Now, what that means is that even like from inception, that the fertilized egg must be treated sacred and must be treated as if it were a human being and have all the rights of a human being. Now, if you subscribe to that point of view, I do understand people who hold that point of view, but the people who hold that point of view have not done much deep thinking about it. They have not done a lot of deep philosophical introspection into what it is they're saying. They've latched onto it as an ideological position because it seems clean, and yet in practice it's not clean at all, because in that early, very early phase of pregnancy, fetuses can be aborted spontaneously very, very easily due to a number of circumstances, and many early pregnancies don't go ahead. And many women have miscarriages without actually knowing they've had a miscarriage. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying this is a phenomenon. This really happens. Also, the position that you would take if you were to say, well, you know, we must completely ban any interference in the ability of that fertilized egg to grow into a person, right? Well, you have to ban the pill as well. You have to ban the birth control pill, for the simple reason that the birth control pill in early pregnancy, if you take an increased dosage of the birth control pill, it will prevent the fertilized egg from implantation, right? So pregnancy in its classical form, and the way it manifests in the body, generally begins with implantation. But the fertilized egg is floating around in the fallopian tubes for quite a while and goes into the uterus before it actually settles. And that takes a week or two. And that's why the morning after pill works, because the morning after pill is just an increased dosage of the same hormones in the regular monthly birth control pill. So women who take the birth control pill are able to induce a type of chemical abortion quite easily. So if you're going to take this very pure position about saying, no, all abortion must be illegal and we must never let, must not interfere in any way with the development of this fertilized egg. You know, once it's been fertilized, it becomes sacred. Then the type of draconian, totalitarian control over women you would have to impose to make that real, it's a trade-off that I'm not willing to accept. And it's like with everything in society, you've got to make trade-offs. It's not about absolutes. It's not about being uncompromising. It is actually about compromising, understanding where the limits are and understanding what the trade-offs are, the risks and the benefits. As soon as you have laws that start to open the way to society becoming increasingly tyrannical and increasingly totalitarian, there you have to say no, there's a greater risk there, because totalitarianism is actually a risk in itself. Therefore, even though we may disagree with abortion, we have to say no, we have to decriminalize it. We have to accept it up to a certain limit. And the position I'm taking is not a controversial one, but it's obscured by the fact that you have people on these extreme ends of the spectrum. On the one hand, you have the Greens, who basically say, no limits at all, right up to right up to birth, right? And, you know, it just boggles my mind that these people can have that position, right? I can't even understand how they could think that way. But it's also very frustrating with the extremists on the other end, who basically won't adopt any position of compromise at all, and therefore they represent a threat to human freedom as well. Our society is plagued by these irrational, ill-considered extremist viewpoints, and on this show I try to find a balance so you can see the truth, but you will be swayed by the ideology of people who are absolutely certain about what they know, and they want everything to be clean and cut and dry and say, no, it's absolutely like this. This is how the Greens are. No, you mustn't interfere with a woman's right in any way, right up to birth. But then why would it stop there? If you're going to allow it right up to the point of birth, why not allow a woman to kill her baby after the baby is born? Please explain why. I mean, I would like to actually have a debate with a Green person, a person of that ilk, right, to explain why they would draw this artificial line between just before birth and just after birth. Because indeed, some academics in Australia have actually questioned that. And there was an article, a study published by some bioethicists a few years ago, and I did discuss it on this show, suggesting that indeed post-birth abortion was no more morally ambiguous than pre-birth abortion. And they were just simply arguing the case, and it was logical. It made a lot of sense, right? There are other bioethicists, like the animal rights guy Peter Singer, who also agree that we should be able to kill children after they've been born, particularly if they've got some unfortunate syndrome which makes them socially unproductive, like Down syndrome. His argument is that if the person cannot be socially productive, then they do not deserve to be called a person, right? So this is another type of tyranny, right? This is a type of a tyranny of social utilitarianism that basically, it's basically a collectivist mindset, presided over by people who claim to be experts, like Peter Singer, just some professor in a university. But these would be the people who would be driving this forward, and they would say, you should be able to kill this child because this child is not going to be useful. But Singer goes even further. He actually says that if the child isn't wanted, if you don't like the child for some reason, you should be able to kill it. Rather than, having the child adopted out and putting some burden on some other poor family that has to take care of your unwanted child, the smartest thing to do is just kill it. I mean, these people really say these things, ladies and gentlemen. And, when we look at it now and we just see the debate about abortion and we see the debate being about whether abortion is criminal or not, we think, well, it's just about that. It's not. And as soon as that particular issue is resolved, we will then move to the next issue. And it will come about in a period of time, I don't know whether it's going to be 10 or 20 years, when this issue of post-birth abortion is going to actually be taken seriously. Unless we wake up. Unless we go through a transformation, a moral, philosophical, spiritual transformation in Western society to understand the dark place that this is leading. And we could look at China as an example. And China has actually started to reverse their trend. But, terrible, terrible things happened in China. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Coming back for one more segment after this. Stay with us.
My name is Stuart Smith from naturespureorganics.com, and I would like to invite you to come by our store at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite D here in Austin, Texas, behind Brave New Books and Chase Bank, to see all our fantastic health and wellness products with your very own eyes. Have a look at our miracle healing clay that started our adventure in alternative medicine. Take a peek at some of our other wonderful products, including our Australian emu oil, lotion candles, olive oil soaps, and colloidal silver and gold. Call 512-264-4043 or find us online at naturespureorganics.com. That's 512-264-4043, naturespureorganics.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook for information on events and our products. naturespureorganics.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with Jurisdictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step-by-step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-E.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem-reaction-solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You are tuned to the Channel of Truth. Truth News Radio Australia, truthnews.com.au. Now for something completely different. I want to talk to you about something that the only reason I'm bringing it up is because I've just discovered some information that I didn't know about before. And it kind of knocked my socks off, to be honest. It's quite interesting. It's about Israel. And it's a letter that Albert Einstein wrote to the New York Times in 1948, protesting the visit of Menachem Begin, a man who was later to become the Prime Minister of Israel, but at that time was essentially a terrorist. Honestly, this letter really amazed me, and because Einstein in this letter warns that Zionism is a form of fascism. And he's completely blatant about it. He's completely clear about it. There is no ambiguity. He's saying that the Zionist terrorists who are operating in Israel at this particular point in time are a type of fascist. Now, isn't it interesting? Because, you know, a number of people over the years have compared the Zionist regime to fascism. And in recent years, whenever that happens, there's always a terrible uproar in the press. How dare they compare Israel to Nazi Germany? How dare they? And it's like, it's the worst, you know, it's like a crime almost to dare to compare Israel to Nazi Germany. And yet many people have done it because the comparisons, the similarities are there. And no one ever talks about Albert Einstein's view on this, right? This has been completely suppressed. I guarantee you, practically nobody knows about this, right? It was just the media just dropped it like a hot potato and didn't want to know about it and has suppressed it for decades and decades and decades. But You know, it's out there. The letter's out there. I found it. Someone actually posted it on Facebook, and there's a copy of it on rents.com. If you just Google Einstein letter, New York Times, Zionist fascism, you'll find it, and there are many sites carrying it. So let's just have a little read of it. Letter to the editor, New York Times, December 4, 1948. To the editors of the New York Times. Among the most disturbing political phenomena of our times is the emergence in the newly created state of Israel of the Freedom Party, a party closely akin in its organization, methods, political philosophy, and social appeal to the Nazi and fascist parties. It was formed out of the membership and following of the former Irgun Zvi Lumi, a terrorist, right-wing, chauvinist organization in Palestine. The current visit of Menachem Begin, leader of this party, to the United States is obviously calculated to give the impression of American support for his party in the coming Israeli elections and to cement political ties with the conservative Zionist elements in the United States. Several Americans of national repute have lent their names to welcome his visit. It is inconceivable that those who oppose fascism throughout the world, if correctly informed as to Mr. Begin's political record and perspectives, could add their names and support to the movement he represents. Before irreparable damage is done by way of financial contributions, public manifestations in Begin's behalf, and the creation in Palestine of the impression that a large segment of America supports fascist elements in Israel, the American public must be informed as to the record and objectives of Mr. Begin and his movement. The public avowals of Begin's party are no guide whatever to its actual character. Today they speak of freedom, democracy, and anti-imperialism, whereas, until recently, they openly preached the doctrine of the fascist state. It is in its actions that the terrorist party betrays its real character. From its past actions, we can judge what it may be expected to do in the future. A shocking example was their behavior in the Arab village of Deir Yassin. This village, off the main roads and surrounded by Jewish lands, had taken no part in the war and had even fought off Arab bands who wanted to use the village as their base. On April 9, terrorist bands attacked this peaceful village, which was not a military objective in the fighting, and killed most of its inhabitants, 240 men, women and children, and kept a few of them alive to parade as captives through the streets of Jerusalem. Most of the Jewish community was horrified at the deed, and the Jewish agency sent a telegram of apology to King Abdullah of Transjordan. But the terrorists, far from being ashamed of their act, were proud of this massacre, publicized it widely, and invited all the foreign correspondents present in the country to view the heaped corpses and the general havoc at Deir Yassin. The Deir Yassin incident exemplifies the character and actions of the Freedom Party. Now, this is so important, ladies and gentlemen, to really be aware of, to think about in the context of terrorism as we see it today in the Middle East, particularly the terrorism of ISIS, who notably have never attacked Israel, have never attacked Israel's interests in any way, and whose tactics are so similar to that of the early Zionist terrorists, that it leads one to think that there may be indeed a connection between Zionism and Islamic extremism. And I've talked about this on other shows, and I did quite a detailed show on it a few months ago where I kind of tried to demonstrate that using terrorism to achieve political ends was a technique which was pioneered by the Zionists, and that the Muslim people in the same part of the world learned from that, and that their adoption of terrorism certainly comes chronologically later than the Zionists. And you couple that with the fact that the actions of so many of these extremist groups seem to actually, in many ways, either further the interests of Israel directly or help Israel by providing a boogeyman that they can then say, well, this is why we need to acquire more lands, this is why we need to build up our army, this is why we need to invade other countries, etc. But in many ways, indeed, the actions of the Islamic extremists seem to directly support the political goals of Israel, in that they obliterate moderate secularist regimes and turn countries into sort of chaotic hellholes where there is no real sovereignty, and which can then be more easily controlled and possibly ultimately taken over by Western interests. And this is certainly what happened in Iraq, certainly what happened in Libya, and it's certainly what they're trying to achieve in Syria. I'll just continue reading from the letter here by Albert Einstein. We don't have much time left. Within the Jewish community, they have preached an admixture of ultra-nationalism, religious mysticism, and racial superiority. He's talking here about the Zionist terrorists. Like other fascist parties, they have been used to break strikes and have themselves pressed for the destruction of free trade unions. In their stead, they have proposed corporate unions on the Italian fascist model. During the last years of sporadic anti-British violence, the IZL and Stern groups inaugurated a reign of terror in the Palestine Jewish community. Teachers were beaten up for speaking against them. Adults were shot for not letting their children join them. By gangster methods, beatings, window smashing, Kristallnacht, just throw that in, Kristallnacht, you know, window smashing, and widespread robberies, the terrorists intimidated the population and exacted a heavy tribute. The people of the Freedom Party have had no part in the constructive achievements in Palestine. They have reclaimed no land, built no settlements, and only detracted from the Jewish defence activity. And this Freedom Party ultimately became one of the dominant political parties in Israel. And as I mentioned, Menachem Begin was the Prime Minister of Israel in the 1970s. The discrepancies between the bold claims being made by Begin and his party and their record of past performance bear the imprint of no ordinary political party. This is the unmistakable stamp of a fascist party for whom terrorism against Jews, Arabs and British alike and misrepresentation are means, and a leader state is the goal. I'll put a link to that article up on the website. It's a very interesting discovery for me, and I'd like to see it more widely known. Well, that's Truth News Radio for this week. I will be back again next week. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today. See you next week.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
You're listening to the Logos Radio Network at logosradionetwork.com.